Hello, we are Angela Benjamin
and David J. Lilly,
and we are both jewellery designer makers who spend every day surrounded by shiny things.
We are both passionate about jewellery
and love learning all we can about jewellery making and sharing what we've learned with you.
Perhaps you're a jewellery lover or creative type, or spend your days at the bench like we do.
Whichever it is, we hope you'll enjoy our sparkling chit-chat, our silly stories, and our thoughts on living a creative and slightly dusty life.
With a few laughs along the way.
You can find our podcasts on all your favourite apps, including, of course, the biggies, Apple, Spotify, and Chrome Podcasts.
So if you want to know who we are and share our passion for all that glitters, then stay with us for the next 30-ish minutes.
This is
Ange
and David with Little Gems on Jewellery
and Life. So hello everybody, welcome back to the podcast. It's just David this time, no Ange, but I'm not by myself. You know full well that when I'm on here without Ange, I'm here with a fabulous guest, and this time winging her way from 17 hours difference, I think it is, I have the most wonderful Dana of Madam Mac Jewellery in Melbourne. Dana, how's Australia today?
Hello, David. Well, it's a whole lot better now that we're chatting, because it was pretty dreary this morning, cold and a little bit wet, but we're good. We're doing great. Thank you for having me on your show.
It's a pleasure. And we've known one another through Instagram for years. And why we haven't chatted before, I have no idea.
No idea. It's absurd, isn't it? I think I've known you for probably 4 to 5 years, perhaps.
Yeah.
Quite easily.
Yeah, I would say so. I would say so. I think you were one of the first people on Instagram that really inspired me. And so I kind of,
oh, bless you.
I couldn't stop sending you, oh my God, this is amazing. And I love this and things like that.
I was going to wear my retro ring for you today, but I totally forgot. I'm being completely boring without any jewellery on.
Oh, woman, I don't know. Can't take you anywhere, can we? This is important.
You just can't. Yeah. I'm either fully glammed up or wearing absolutely no jewellery at all. So just depends on the day.
Fair enough. But what you're wearing, that jacket, is pretty glam as well. I mean, it's just a myriad.
Why, thank you. It's very colourful, very bright. Off eBay. It's just freezing in my little garage shed, so I had to get something to get me through winter.
Well, of course, you're in winter and I'm in summer, which is weird.
I'm so jealous.
Oh, don't. It's been 36 degrees here today in Vernon, and we've had smoke coming for the last 24 hours. So it just smoke from the fires outside. So, yeah, it's not the best of days today.
No, doesn't sound like it.
Yeah. But anyway, moving swiftly on, I think I should start by asking you, and I know the listeners would love to know, how did you get to become a jeweler?
It's kind of crazy. So pretty much from the minute I could speak and walk, I was obsessed with all things very sparkly. And I basically devoted all of my childhood days to just finding little trinkets at local markets and at fleas and at garage sales. And every time Mum would take me to the local plaza, she would lose me. And she would find me outside one of the jewelers just standing there being obsessed with everything glittery. So long story short, I've always adored jewellery and I've been collecting it. I started off collecting vintage, estate and antique jewellery, once I got my first job. And I kind of took a detour down the science route. So I'm not sure, I think a lot of people know that I actually was a research scientist for my whole working career. Wow. Because I always loved biology. So I was primarily in cancer research for that whole duration after graduating university. And at the end of 2020, I just woke up and said, I can't do this anymore. I just have to follow what I'm being pulled towards, which was obviously making jewellery. So I didn't have any real, training or experience with jewellery previous to making that decision in 2018. Mm-hmm. But I made it my mission to just take a couple of casual classes and just teach myself how to do things. That's pretty much how I ended up where I am today.
Wonderful.
So it's crazy. I can't believe I actually did it. It just seems to be that everything I kind of joke about somehow comes to fruition, which is really cool.
That's lovely. And you've made an amazing business out of it. My God, woman, you never seem to stop. You're running workshops, you're making jewelry, you're on Instagram like it's a rash. I mean, yeah. I thought I was bad with not getting off Instagram, but I think you must be on it permanently, 24/7.
I call myself the 24-hour hotline because I'm constantly responding to DMs and helping people with their troubleshooting. And, you know, like, it's so funny because when you look at someone's Instagram, you don't actually get to see what happens behind the scenes. And, you know, it can look like a whole lot of fun, but it's really hard back here as well. You know, being a one-woman show, it's my first ever business. I'm just basically chasing a dream on a whim. I didn't have a real plan at all either. So it's been really, really wild, but I try my best to sort of stay on top of it all. The workshops have been keeping me really busy, and I adore running workshops. I've been blessed to have the most incredible humans walk through my studio and online as well via Zoom. So yeah, I'm just chasing this crazy dream and just ultimately seeking happiness, really.
Cool. Well, I know you bring a lot of happiness to others. So talking Thank about you. Workshops, I mean, I love doing workshops as well. So what is it that's special to you about running workshops for people?
I think the most special thing is when we share knowledge and we bounce ideas and just get the opportunity to chat about life just authentically and honestly. It really can just connect people, and it also keeps art alive. And I think it's really special to pass on that knowledge and keep those handcrafts alive, especially in the age of AI and when the world is just progressing at such a rapid pace. It's kind of nice to just tuck away with people that you get along with and just do stuff that you love. Mm-hmm. And for me, it's just so rewarding. You know, I've trained up a lot of people who've then moved on to start businesses as well. And seeing some of the stuff they're making, it's just incredible, you know. But if they didn't take that one class, or if they didn't have that idea, or if I didn't plant seed for somebody or share my wisdom and experience, they mightn't be on that side of life either. So, yeah, it's just spreading joy and love and knowledge, and it keeps everything alive in summary.
That's wonderful, and it's so true as well. There are so many people that never have the opportunity to really pursue a dream the way that you and I have, and we made that opportunity for ourselves. But is there a workshop of all the myriad that you do that gives you the most joy personally, when you see people kind of just get it?
My favorite workshops are the beginners workshops. Yeah. They're actually quite funny, to be honest with you, because for 75% of the duration of the class, they're actually never convinced that their ring is going to turn out. Mm-hmm. And I always say to them, you have to just trust the process. I promise you it's going to burst to life in less than half an hour. Just seeing the joy on their faces when their wax block suddenly does look like a ring. And, you know, when they come and they get their casting back and they're ready to sort of unbox it and start finishing it. Like, just the joy on their faces makes me so happy. So the beginner's classes are my favorite.
Yeah, I would totally agree reason. With that. Yeah, I totally agree with that. Seeing someone discover something within them that they wanted to have but didn't believe was in there, and they go away with a grin on their face in the way that they haven't in so many X number of days, months, weeks, whatever, is truly, truly wonderful. And actually, you very handily segued me into my next question, which is, I don't know that everybody knows exactly your way of making jewelry, which is you start with wax.
Correct, yes. Now, so I start with wax from a tube or a block. And the thing I love about it most is the reductive process, because I get to use hand tools and some power tools to translate that from a concept into a physical, you know, 2D and 3D design.
What was it, carving, wax, casting, you know, all the different ways? And I know you use wax in a myriad of ways. Was it that drew you to jewelry making, or was it that you got started making jewelry and then you discovered wax?
So I actually started making jewellery back in 2018 with a local jeweller, silversmithing, so just traditional fabrication. So she taught me how to just form rings, make bezels, solder, all the really basic stuff. And I was basically working in the lab at that time, and I was tinkering away at every opportunity I could get in the garage. I was trying to cut sheets, solder, hand pierce, and I kind of hit a brick wall with the designs. I was just feeling like it was kind of just looking like everything else out there. And I was frustrated because I didn't know how to build sculptural things. I happened to, in that first month of 2020, I was just browsing through Instagram and I ended up opening up a highlight on a jeweler's Instagram at the top of their bio. And I was just watching some of their processes. And I thought to myself, that does not look like they're fabricating from sheet and wire. They're doing something else because mm-hmm. they were striking a file on something and all of this fluff was falling off. So being new to everything, I didn't want to reach out too soon because I was very nervous. Because obviously, you know, you get a lot of people who help and a lot of people who don't in the jewelry industry, which is understandable. But I reached out and I said, Tash, may I please ask you, what exactly are you using? Like, what are your materials? And she said, oh, my goodness, don't you know about lost wax carving? And I said, no. So she actually kindly filmed a 5-minute video of her studio and all of the wax stuff that she had going on at her bench at the time, like all of her orders and her carvings. And I basically just Googled lost wax carving course Melbourne. And it happened to be that the jeweler I learned who to silversmith with was launching her first ever trial wax carving course. And I just happened to get in 2 weeks before the first lockdown from COVID. So it was wild.
I bet. It was just
and
meant
that's
to be.
When I knew, that's when I knew that that was it. The minute the file struck the wax in that class, my heart was just so drawn to the feeling of joy and the relaxation that it brings with it too.
Yeah.
So I hit the ground running.
I love the fact, I mean, you said the thing that you really enjoy about working with wax is the reductive process. I do too.
I love it.
Will possibly start with a design. I'm more likely to start with just an idea in my head. And then I'll start taking the wax off. And I love the point where actually something goes wrong and I have to adjust it, or I glue more or re-wax some wax onto it. Or I suddenly see things that I could never have seen if I drew it completely beforehand. And you, oh, let's take a bit off here and let's stick a hole in there and, you know, put a bit more on. It's such an amazing way to create, I think, because it's like the wax is telling me sometimes where to go next.
It's so very true. And you couldn't have articulated your thoughts any better because I feel exactly the same with it. You know, a lot of people ask me, how do you get your design from in your head to a piece of paper and then from a wax block that looks like nothing into a design? And I say to them, well, I actually rarely sketch because I never follow my own brief. Now, of course, if I've got a client brief, I have to follow, you know, their parameters. And that's fine. I know what steps to take to get there. But, you know, for all of the collections that I've made, I've kind of just sat there with my gemstones and a block of wax and I've just let my heart translate into a final design. I think I've sketched one design for a beautiful statement necklace that I made. And I managed to execute that on point, but everything else kind of just deviates. And I just love the end product. I love those happy accidents as well. That's where the beauty is with the process, because you can add, you can remove more, or you can totally just change up your whole method.
Yeah, and I love that. I mean, some people I know seem to feel quite nervous about working with wax. What I just say to them is, if it goes wrong, you just melt it down and start again.
Exactly, it's so cheap. It's so cheap.
Yes. Exactly. Now, you carve wax from hard blocks.
I do.
I know you use wax in a liquid form for adding, but I think you've also used a wax gun, haven't you, for creating, where you've got the wax and the gun.
So I bought this fancy pants wax gun. It cost a slight fortune. I think I've taken it out maybe 5 or 6 times at the most.
What?
Yeah, not very much. I really have to get back into it, but I made a series of like organic molten heart pendants with that gun. Admittedly, I loved using it, but it can be a little bit tricky, like with hand-eye coordination, because if you're building on a mandrel, you have to learn how to sort of press the gun and rotate your mandrel at the same time. And it takes a bit of time to sort of get the knack of it. But yeah, you reminded me I have to actually get it out of its case and maybe even launch a workshop with the wax gun.
Yeah, that's like a good idea.
That could be fun.
Yeah, it must have been. I've not tried it. I was quite intrigued when I saw you doing it. And kind of like, and then you told me at the time it wasn't the cheapest bit of kit you'd ever bought. So I thought, do I want to invest at this point or not? And as yet, I haven't. Because I mean, the one thing I do love is like you, I love tools. Like most jewelers, we love tools.
Yeah, we do.
I like my rotary tools, you know, and then I carve away with that. There's something really lovely about taking stuff away. And I weirdly can't get my head around starting with nothing with wax and building it up.
Right, so you haven't quite delved into that yet on a full scale, have you?
No, I haven't. Naughty me.
I love it. You know what? I think if you do give it a go, you'll find it's just the most relaxing, beautiful thing. It's a lot less stressful than reducing from a hard block of wax. To be honest with you know, sometimes I have really difficult days just mentally, or I'm just feeling a bit low motivation, and the first thing I do is I come into the shack and I basically just build up molten wax. You can just escape completely. It's beautiful.
Yeah.
It's beautiful. And you don't need much to do it. I just use a I've just got like a soldering pen,
Right.
and it's just got a really broad temperature range. And I just build up, if I'm making a pendant, I just build it up on a little porcelain dish, so it's got a nice flat back. For the ring, you can just buy one of those wax design kits with all of the cylinders that have the different ring sizes, and just build up on there.
Yeah.
But highly recommend you give it a go.
I will have to.
I love your designs. I think you can do some really wild stuff with the
Thank
organic
you.
buildup.
Yeah, it would definitely be wild, that's for sure.
Yes, I expect nothing less from you, David. Wild is the only way.
You got to be true. This is it. Yeah, I just can't do ordinary. It's not in my DNA. Sorry.
I'm the same. Every time I try to make something normal that people might like, it just goes into some type of chaos. And I'm like, this is me. Like, we're doing art for us and to share it with people who resonate with what we do. And yeah, I'm very much on the weird. I like keeping it a bit weird and a bit big and just in your face type of thing.
You know, you created a wonderful style that is elegant and bulbous at the same time, in that it has
Oh, I love that
wonderful kind of
description.
flowing quality to it, as though, you know, but it still has this feel as though you could, you know, could run your fingers and enjoy the texture as you kind of stroke the ring on your hand or play with the pendant.
Absolutely. And on that point, I'm very much a fidgeter. You've probably noticed already on our video.
No, lighted.
But I love things that are tactile, that you can fidget with as well during the day. So like even my rings that have big, like goopy claws, I love running my fingers around the claws all day while I'm in a thinking mode, or you know, thinking about the future or what I'm going to do next. But yeah, jewelry for me, you should be able to feel that it's on. I don't do dainty.
No.
You should be able to feel like it's just something really special. I don't know about you, but I've got power jewels, and when I put them on for the day, I have the best day ever. And that's kind of what I want for people to feel, that they put something on and they feel like they can conquer anything that day. You know, that's what it is to me.
Yeah, absolutely. I have the jewelry I kind of wear most days, and then I have the things that I want to put on when I want to say something. It's like,
Yeah.
who am I today? It's that ring.
Exactly.
I'm gonna wear the ridiculous bangle with all the gems in today, rather
I
than the
love
other
it.
one, that kind of thing.
Well,
Yeah, but
they
I'm
say
sort
that
of
your
ridiculous.
jewelry speaks before you even speak when you enter a room. So,
That's true. As long as I get it angled right for the lights, then it just blinds everybody, and we're fine.
got to get the flashlights in the right, you know, the right position. Don't you
Yeah.
love like a hotel lobby under those lift lights? They're just excellent. Best place to photograph your jewelry.
Damn, I'm gonna have to stand there and just kind of like move my wrist around a bit and wave my hands to see if people think that man is mad over there, and just then be
No,
like,
people do.
no.
You'll get weird looks, but then they finally realize, oh, she's just looking at some diamonds on
I
highly recommend it.
will have to try it, see if I get thrown out or not.
Yeah, I love
Yeah.
it.
So you have a very organic style, and it's a very unique
Yep.
style. I haven't seen anybody who does what you do.
Yeah.
So where do you find your inspiration when it comes to creating your style?
The inspiration. It's a difficult question. Like, I've got some favorite artists, but I don't actually have anything that's similar to theirs. It's really strange you say that. My main inspiration comes from the burning desire to not ever go back to science. That's the honest truth. Now, I have to say, on a serious note, you'll notice that a lot of my jewelry has a lot of like granules and little bubbles on it.
Yes.
Now that I've actually taken that element from one of my favorite jewelry eras, which is the Victorian era. So you'll notice that a lot of the silver from like the, you know, early to mid 1800s had a lot of those little granulations around it. I'm talking those decorative brooches that had all of the beautiful hand engravings and the mixed metals. So when I started making jewelry, I thought to myself, I would love to take a really common element from my favorite era and bring that across into my jewelry. So I get a lot of my inspiration from there. And, you know, a lot of my designs have a bit of like a vintage quirky feel, which obviously stems from my love of vintage jewelry too.
Yeah.
That's so really it's kind of just a mishmash of everything, really.
Well, that's what makes it uniquely yours, isn't it?
Exactly. And it's just, you know, just making whatever I make in the moment is just a way for me to take the internalized chaos and put that energy into something physical and tangible. So, yeah, it's a bit crazy.
Yeah, definitely. So what are you working on at the moment?
Not a lot, actually. I don't even know where I've put it because I cleaned the studio. I've got some big statement gems at the moment, some nice ametrines, some quartz, some big sapphires as well. And I'm thinking of just making a one-off collection of just cool big statement rings, sort of like rings that would come out of a lollipop machine. You know those gumball machines where you put 20 cents in and it spits out like a plastic jewel? So I've got this beautiful, I think it's an 11 carat precision cut white topaz.
My God, that's huge.
And I've just made a stunning like solitaire. It's got a really cute basket. It's got little like holes and piercings in it. It kind of looks like Swiss cheese, but then I've built up the band in an organic type of texture.
Okay.
So I'm kind of going for a vibe. I'm still trying to hone in on what I want my jewelry to look like because it's kind of difficult coming up with a cohesive aesthetic and collection. But I think I'm at the point where I'd love to incorporate precision with organic. So having those two elements in one piece of jewelry. That's all I've made. I've got plans to make a lot more, but I just haven't physically done anything because the workshops have taken over.
Okay, fair enough. You can't do both at one time, can you?
It's impossible.
Yeah, totally get you. So when you are working, what's your greatest fear?
My greatest fear? Gosh, it's funny you say that because my greatest fear of all time is that this business will just collapse at any given moment.
That's what goes for all independent jewelers.
I try to not go there. But no, to answer your question very seriously, my biggest fear is not having enough cash flow to actually sustain the business. It's extremely difficult at startup. I think a lot of people are under the illusion, every startup is backed by like $250,000 and they've got a whole lot of savings. But you know, when you're out there just chasing your dreams on a whim and you haven't got a plan and you just throw your life literally upside down, money runs out pretty fast and it's really quite stressful. So lack of cash flow or running out of enough flow to keep going scares the bejesus out of me. That's the unfiltered, honest truth.
I'm totally with you on that one as well.
Second to that is Instagram going down.
You should do what Sonny did. I don't know. Do you know Sonny Bailiard? He's one
no.
of the Sonny was one of the jewelers in All the Glitter Series 1.
And I didn't watch it, admittedly.
And he said one of his biggest fears was that Instagram went down and he just lost his audience. So he's starting to build up a YouTube channel.
Yeah.
Because the likelihood of that being pulled down is far smaller than Facebook getting in their knickers in a twist and then, you know, taking us down.
Exactly right.
You know, you're so good with your videos of demonstrating what you're making and everything else. And you're incredibly photogenic. You should start a YouTube channel.
Bless you. Well, I have. I did about a year and a half ago.
Okay.
Although you probably haven't noticed it because I'm terrible at advertising myself and all the channels that I have.
There you go. No.
So I do have a YouTube. I think I've got about 85 subscribers possibly. The channel's about a year and a half old. But, you know, David, the thing with all of those big engines is you really have to be on it all the time to actually gain exposure and awareness. Yeah. And I just find it's becoming increasingly difficult for me because the more platforms that you're spread across, you start to spread yourself too thin. And then you find yourself just managing socials and not actually being able to have all the time to run your business. So yeah, I'm kind of at that point where I really have to think about, right, where do I want to just focus my main platforms? I'm just going to pick two and then run with both of them.
Okay, that makes sense. It's very easy to fall down that rabbit hole of I've got to be everywhere and then end up doing none of it any good.
Exactly. It's awful. It's awful. Yeah. What do they say? The jack of all trades is the master of none.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Big believer in that.
Yes, it's true. I've tried that one. I think I've done too many things in my life at this point. But
too many fabulous things, I imagine.
We'll go with yes on that one. So you've said how much joy you get out of running your workshops, but when you're not running your workshops and you're actually, you know, making at the bench, what's the most joyful part of making a piece of jewelry for you? Is there one part that really stands out as the best?
The best part for me is when you've just finished your design and you get to try it on and it's basically translated perfectly throughout the process. Yeah, I'm just in love with the whole process, but very much the end point for me of seeing that I've been capable of, that I can do this. It's that type of thing. Because it doesn't just feed into today. When you nail something today, it feeds in tomorrow, into tomorrow and into your future as well. So every little bit that I do, the joy is knowing that it's going to contribute to tomorrow and 3 months' time and in 5 years' time. Yeah, the most joyous part is just watching design at the end just burst to life.
That's lovely. Yeah, I have to agree. Yeah. When you see it, I mean, it's like getting the silver or, you know, cast back from once you've had the wax cast and seeing what it really looks like. And
it's the best. It's the
getting
best.
Getting the gems set and you haven't broken any of them and those kind of bits.
Yeah. That's always a huge joy. I've broken a few in my time, I'll admit. But, you know, if it's jewellery for a client, my favourite part of the entire process is when they actually receive that piece of jewellery and they send me the photo of them wearing it and all of their thoughts. So that's like the ultimate joy when somebody receives something I've made for them and they just love it and it fits well and it feels good and they love it. So
that's fabulous. And talking about gems, you were talked that you've got some sapphires and ametrine and some quartz, you know, waiting for these fabulous solitaire rings. What gems do you really love? What's your favourite gemstone?
I've got a few, actually. Look, definitely sapphires, because they come in an array of all sorts of colours.
Yep.
And they're just so wonderful to work with. They're very versatile. I can cast them in place, which is one of my favourite techniques, or I can set them directly in metal and they withstand, you know, the harshness of the procedures. Sapphires, definitely, because you can just do fun stuff with them. And all of the colours of the rainbow, I'm there for it. I love it. Second to that, you know, if I had the budget or I had the means, I'd probably be reclaiming vintage and antique diamonds. So all of the old cuts that were hand cut, I just love the way that they shimmer under incandescent lighting. It's just happiness for the heart. But, you know, being at startup, we're not quite at that point yet where we can just go all out with super duper, you know, super duper up their stuff. But yeah, anything colourful, anything big. I love things that have inclusions in them as well. I think inclusions also just, you know, they're a whole world inside of a gemstone and they're just fascinating to me and you're capturing nature's beauty. But you would have probably noticed when I started my business, I started off with a lot of synthetic gemstones purely because a lot of the stuff I was doing was experimental and I didn't want to be, you know, putting in hundreds or thousands of dollars into each piece. I'm sort of transitioning into working with just natural gemstones.
Cool.
At the moment, which is lovely. Cool.
Yeah, and I totally agree with you with sapphires. Sapphires offer such an array of colors and combinations of colors, obviously in the same gem as well, that they're just
exactly.
I've started getting into using them more than I had done.
Oh, they're just fun.
Just fun. I've got an orange sapphire on hold that I'm waiting to send to me at the moment. I'm really, it's like fire orange. It's just incredible. Oh,
yes. So yeah. Good. Mm. The orange one's actually quite difficult to come by, as well as purple. It's quite tricky to get like a nice saturated one.
Right.
But I'll be keen to see the orange one once you release that.
Yeah, yeah, I'm waiting for it. It's not winging its way to Canada yet. It's still in the UK, but yeah. I'm waiting for a big enough parcel before he sends them out to me. So,
how exciting.
Yeah. Now, we have been chatting for nearly half an hour already.
Yep.
Which is crazy. And I've only got through half of my questions. So I have to ask you, Would you like to come back and do some more? Question.
I would absolutely love that, David. Yes, please.
Okay. So for the first half of this interview, shall we say that, I'm going to ask you a daft question and we'll see what you come up with the answer. If you were a fruit, what fruit would you be?
Oh, gosh. This is so tricky. I'd probably be a blueberry.
Okay.
Because I like the way they just explode in your mouth. And I love that they've got that lovely gritty texture. It's just so nice.
Uh-huh. Yes, I can see you as a blueberry. You do tend to explode all over the internet. But there's some definite grit with you as well.
Now, what fruit would you be, David? I'm curious.
Oh, I don't know. I got asked this by another jeweler, and I cannot remember what I said. So clearly it wasn't really me. But I have no idea. Probably a raspberry because we talk about raspberries not only for the fruit but the sound. And apparently I'm always making raspberries according to my husband. And I don't think it's anything to do with the fruit.
How funny. I love it.
Yeah. So on that note, I'm going to say thank you so much, Dana, for chatting with me this time.
Thank you, David. It's been a pleasure.
And forward to recording the second half with you really soon.
Thank you for listening. We hope you enjoyed the episode and come back to us another couple of weeks for the next one. In the meantime, also thanks to Alfie Amadeus for the amazing track, Octopi, which is our theme music. See you soon. Bye-bye.